It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR and at www.wrir.org. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
It's unlawful to buy a vehicle from someone who doesn't have title. 617, it's unlawful to sell a vehicle if you don't have title. And 618, another very interesting one, John will talk a little bit about this later, that it's unlawful to possess a title that doesn't have your name on it, except if it's got the name of your spouse. And by your name on it, this means you're the owner or you're the lien holder. There's no such thing as just giving someone a title to hold as a security interest. Their name has to be on it or it's a crime.
Consumer protection attorney Tom Domonoski explains Virginia's vehicle title laws. And during this week's News You Can Use, you'll learn about the cycle of debt of payday loans, car title loans, line of credit loans, and internet loans. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 245, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and online at www.wrir.org, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. The Virginia Bureau of Financial Institutions just published data about car title loans made in Virginia in 2013, and it isn't pretty. Does it seem like there are a lot more car title loan stores than there were a year ago? That's because we had a 23% increase in car title loan stores, from 395 to 489. The number of loans increased over 10%, from more than 161,000 to almost 178,000. Over 17,000 Virginians had their cars taken by car title lenders, and many of those people lost their independence and their ability to work. It's obvious that many borrowers cannot afford these loans if you look at the 32% increase in repossessions and the huge amount of borrowers who are at least 60 days behind in their monthly payments, 18% of all of the loans made. These figures are no surprise to anyone who has studied the issue. Legitimate lenders will loan only to borrowers who have the ability to repay. On the other hand, car title lenders will loan regardless of the borrower's ability to repay, as long as they can get their hands on the borrower's car title. In other news, payday loans, car title loans, line of credit loans, and internet loans, what do they have in common? The cycle of debt. What is the cycle of debt? Well, here's a picture of it from the training manual at Ace Cash Express, a large national payday, internet, and car title lender. Step 1. The customer applies for a short-term loan. Step 2. The financial institution approves the loan application. Step 3. The customer exhausts the cash and does not have the ability to repay. Step 4. The financial institution contacts the customer for payment or offers the option to refinance or extend the loan. Step 5. The customer does not make a payment and the account enters collections. Back to step 1. The customer applies for a short-term loan. This picture comes from a consent order from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, where Ace Cash Express agreed to pay $10 million in fines and restitution to borrowers they bullied into a cycle of debt. Unfortunately, it isn't just Ace Cash Express that uses the debt trap. According to Richard Cordray, director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, one could readily conclude that the business model of the payday industry depends on people becoming stuck in these loans for the long term, since almost half their business comes from people who are basically paying high-cost rent on the amount of their original loan. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. Virginia's Department of Motor Vehicles serves 6 million licensed drivers who own more than 7.5 million registered vehicles and has more face-to-face contact with Virginia citizens than any other state agency. Consumer Protection Attorney Tom Domonoski explained Virginia's vehicle title laws at the 2013 annual statewide Legal Aid Conference, and the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show was there. Here are his comments.
So, the Virginia titling statute, we just pulled together the various parts of the Virginia Code about titles, and we started with the UCC because sometimes you do have to educate a judge that we're not talking about the UCC, we're talking about titling statutes. And in the UCC, Virginia's made clear that you apply the laws about that real property, about the property, the vehicle, and you apply the titling statutes. The main ones start in 46.2603. We put them all here. Some of them just say really basic things like, you issue the certificate of title. And then they also say some really important things like 616. It's unlawful to buy a vehicle from someone who doesn't have title. 617, it's unlawful to sell a vehicle if you don't have title. And 618, another very interesting one, John will talk a little bit about this later, that it's unlawful to possess a title that doesn't have your name on it, except if it's got the name of your spouse. And by your name on it, this means you're the owner or you're the lien holder. There's no such thing as just giving someone a title to hold as a security interest. Their name has to be on it, or it's a crime. It's a crime to hold that title. And they talk about how leased vehicle goes and how you transfer title. And 46.2629, the odometer reading has got to be reported on the certificate of title when you transfer the law. We're going to show the Odometer Act later, but this is a Virginia analog. Odometer readings are not supposed to be on separate documents. They're on certificates of title, which is why the title is important. And there's whole provisions about how to transfer title when they're lost. These are all in there. You don't have to go to the code. Eventually these are going to, be outdated. But title law changes very slowly. 638 talks about how you put the security interest on the title. And if you're doing bankruptcy work, 639. If they don't file within 30 days of a purchase their security interest, then their security interest only is perfected as of the day they file. If you have someone who has just bought a car and they're going into bankruptcy, you can get into this issue about when it was perfected, but they're allowed to look back 30 days for the lien as long as they get it there within 30 days of when the purchase happened. 643 I've used regularly, which is once that security interest has been paid, they've got to give the title up. And sometimes they're really slow giving the title up. And this sets a 10-day time period in 643. We put in the stuff about how garage keepers and mechanics exercise liens. The important thing about those start out with the fact that those are possessory liens to begin with. Some mechanics think they can go out and repossess a car after they've given it up. That is not what the Virginia law allows. Then if they're buying from car dealers, there's car dealer-specific titling statutes. So the next section we put in starts in the 1500s 46.2, because this is related specifically to car dealers. It again requires the compliance with the Federal Odometer Act by using the title as the means to disclose the odometer reading. The temporary registration is really important. We're going to talk more about how temporary registrations go. It's a very long section, but important. And after that, there's a whole next titling thing about salvage and rebuilt vehicles. Salvage and rebuilt vehicle law in Virginia is not very good because it's constrained by definitions, and some of the definitions mean, especially for our legal aid clients, they're not covered. A lot of the salvage law is keyed off of that definition there in the middle, late model vehicle. We have a lot of protection for vehicles if they're damaged within their first 5 years. But if that vehicle is, you know, more than 5 years old and is not worth at least $10,000, it's not going to qualify as a late model vehicle, and it doesn't have the same protections that you might think that are in the code. So we put all this in here so you can move through it. And the important part is, if an insurance company gets involved, insurance companies have separate duties for what they have to do when they pay off a vehicle, whether it's a late model vehicle or not. If an insurance company has bought a vehicle as part of a claims process, they're going to have to mark it salvage. The titling cases, we put them here in full, the main ones. Allstate Insurance Company v. Atlanta. If a judge hasn't been through Virginia titling law, you start with this case. It makes very clear Virginia's a strict title state, and that you transfer ownership of a car by signing the title. And if you sign the title away, you've transferred ownership of the car. And if you haven't signed the title away, you haven't transferred ownership of the car. The next case I put in there, Bain v. Commonwealth. This is the case you cite to for security interest questions about whether the lien has to be on the title. And it makes very clear that having the lien on the title perfects it, but it's a valid lien even if it's not perfected. And the Federal Odometer Act. The nice thing about the Federal Odometer Act is they've increased the statutory damages. The Federal Odometer Act has a main requirement that is in here that the title be used to transfer the ownership. The problem with enforcing that requirement is you have to show intent to defraud. And the courts take a different tact on what is an intent to defraud requirement evidence. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. But this is the main part of the Federal Odometer Act and the regs that then implement it. 49 CFR 580.5, disclosure of odometer information. It talks specifically about using the title to disclose the information. There's two sample complaints. These can get very detailed. When we're bringing title work cases, we like to use very detailed complaints because this information is knowable. We can attach it to the complaint. We can show the judge right off the bat that what we're saying is true, and it's shown on these documents.
You've been listening to consumer protection attorney Tom Domonoske explaining Virginia's vehicle title laws at the 2013 annual statewide legal aid conference of Virginia's legal aid attorneys. We'll be back in a moment. We continue now with the remarks of consumer protection attorney Tom Domonoske at the 2013 annual statewide legal aid conference explaining Virginia's vehicle title laws.
I would not try and get a computer hookup with the DMV. This form can let you either get paper copies, or you can continue on like the second part of the form and get a computer hookup with the DMV. The main reason you don't want to get a computer hookup with the DMV is you suddenly become responsible for how that computer hookup is used and how that information is kept confidential. And there's a whole bunch of duties that I don't think you want to take. Whereas if you get paper documents from the DMV, they're responsible for redacting them. And then they send you the paper documents, and what you get, you've been given from the DMV, and you can use in whatever way you want without anyone saying that you violated your computer hookup with the DMV and were misusing confidential information. So you submit this application. It does have to be an application, one per office. You cannot have, we did look at this within the legal aid community, having the Virginia Poverty Law Center get one user number, and then they would pull documents for all the offices, and the DMV did not like that. They did not want that. Their form is, you know, one per office. You fill this out. You say what you're going to do with it. You identify who's going to be signing on the requests, and you end up paying a little money. You know, you pay $25 to get a DMV history from them, and it's very useful. And the last thing, I just put a sample title document there. I used my wife and my car. So this is what a Virginia title looks like. And we're going to talk more about specifically how these titles are done. And that's the front. That's the back of a Virginia title with assignment spaces. And we also added, you'll see this document, a reassignment of title. Dealers use reassignment of titles regularly when they should not be using reassignment of titles, and instead they should be using this document that's a power of attorney. We're going to talk about how these documents work. And before I turn it over to John Gale to talk about the titling process and documents, one thing that I'll just point out in terms of salvage vehicles, this 95 Honda, I bought at a junkyard. I bought it at a junkyard when there were 97,000 miles on it. That's at 97,513. It was a total wreck. I bought it when my oldest daughter was 15. She was going to start driving in 6 months, and I wanted a car that I wasn't going to be concerned if she wrecked it. And it did wonders, right? I mean, she hit a few things, and I wasn't concerned. And my younger daughter drove it. She hit a few things. I wasn't concerned. I'm driving it now. I've hit a few things. I'm very concerned. And this car is still running, but it is a prior salvage vehicle before Virginia had changed its laws. So back in 2002, Virginia law was different, and they did not carry a salvage brand forward. You could actually have a vehicle that was salvage brand in Virginia, which when it was then rebuilt, if it passed inspection, special safety inspection, it could come forward and not have the brand on there. So I have a prior salvage vehicle that does not say salvage on it, but if someone was looking at buying this car that now has 210,000 miles on it, has been repeatedly hit or hit other things, if they went to that vehiclehistory.gov, that would pull up the salvage history. So the salvage history is there electronically, it's just not there on the title. So let's talk about titles, how you get them, how they work.
Titling. I'll just go through the basics because sometimes people aren't a little sure. What happens is when you buy a vehicle, what do you want when you've paid that person or your client has paid something for the vehicle? You want your car, but what else? When you buy a home, you don't just get the home. What do you get that's important to you? The deed. And what is the deed? What do you do with the deed? Record it. Why do you record it? So everybody else knows it's your house. And so it's on the record, and it becomes your... Same thing happens with a car. When you buy a car, you pay for it, but you want the title. And what happens most of the time in the marketplace is that people will buy a vehicle from the dealer, and the dealer will say, oh, I'll do all the title work. And some of the unscrupulous ones will say, and, you know, we're paying this processing fee is for doing all the DMV work, which is not what the processing fee is for. They'll say that anyway to justify it. They want to do the title work. Why don't they just hand you the title right then? Maybe they don't want you to see what's on the title because that title might have a brand on it. Or maybe that title might have the prior owner's name on it because you might then look at the title and call that prior owner up, and if you're careful, and say, you know, this car has an odometer reading of X. Was the car ever in an accident or not? Prior to the sale of the car, you have a right to see the title. The law, as we went through rather quickly, you'll see under federal law and Virginia law, it requires that the odometer information on that title be disclosed on the title. Lots of times, your clients or you, when you buy a car, get a separate disclosure statement that says, I certify that the odometer reading of $35,000 is the actual mileage to the best of my knowledge. It's on a separate form, and everybody thinks that's fine. It's not the law. The law is that you are supposed to get that odometer disclosure on the prior title. That way you can see the title going up from one person to the other to the and gradually rising if there have been a number of assignments on that same title. It's also important to see the prior title because it also gives you the name of the prior owners, and so that you can check to see that the mileage is going up accurately.
I do want to talk about this real quick just so you understand what this is saying. The original statutes are clear. It's unlawful to sell a car if you don't have title to it. It's unlawful to buy a car from someone who does not have title to it. Then in another part of the code, the General Assembly has told the DMV how to allow dealers to sell cars they don't have titles to. So one of the things to understand when suing the car dealers is they have a lot of power, right? We have these very clear laws that say no one's allowed to sell a car without a title, no one's allowed to buy a car from someone who doesn't have title, and they were able to get the General Assembly to mandate the process that allows them to sell cars without titles. And they have one thing that's true that they can say, which is, if Mr. Domonoske trades his car into me and I want to sell it the next day, but there was a lien on that car and I've sent a check off to that bank, I'm not going to get that lien for at least 7 days. I mean, I'm not going to get that title back from them for at least 7 days. There is a real issue of people trading in cars that have liens, in which case they don't have the title, the dealer paying off the lien. Now the dealer's got the car on the dealer's lot. Dealer has done everything the dealer needed to do, but dealer doesn't have title to it. And dealer has to wait till my bank sends the dealer the title. And the dealers have a very good claim to say, you know what we want to do with that car? We want to sell it the very next day. We got to keep our transactions moving. We got to keep the metal moving. I have customers on the lot. They want to buy that car. I can't tell them to come back, you know, next week. Maybe I'll have title. That fact pattern is how the dealers got permission to sell cars when they didn't have titles. The federal law is very clear. The only way you make an odometer disclosure is on the title document that's transferring ownership. But how do you do that if my bank's holding the title and I want to trade the car in? They got the federal government to authorize this secure power of attorney. On the very top of it in the little letters there, it says this form may only be used when title is physically held by lien holder or has been lost. If the title has been lost or held by a lien holder, they can use this form to do for me to do the odometer disclosure to them, which is part A, where I'm just giving them a power of attorney to put it on the title. And then part B, they can use this form to make the odometer disclosure to a new buyer. It's the only way they do that. And this is a secure form. It can't be altered once pens have started marking on it. And it would allow the new buyer, in this case, Dabney Dunn, who's buying in this sample, to see the odometer disclosure from the prior seller, just as if they were looking at the title. This is the only way they're supposed to do an odometer disclosure outside the title. Just like the temporary certificates, it was for a specific purpose. There's a legitimate specific purpose, and they don't use it for those purposes. Instead of using a power of attorney, they'll do what John said, which is they'll just use a separate reassignment. And if they decide later they don't want to sell the car, they'll just tear it up. They're not supposed to be able to pretend to sell a car. They're supposed to have the title there or the secure power of attorney to sell the car. And the reason is there should be important information on the title.
You've been listening to consumer protection attorney Tom Domonoske explaining Virginia's vehicle title laws at the 2013 annual statewide legal aid conference of Virginia Legal Aid Attorneys. This is the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. You can get free legal information at the statewide legal aid website. This is www.valegalaid.org. You also may get free pre-recorded legal information by phone during non-business hours. These are before 9 a.m., after 5 p.m., and on weekends and legal holidays. Call toll-free 1-866-534-5243. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Bedbugs continue to be a vexing problem for landlords and tenants alike. Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when Peyton Whiteley from Legal Services of Northern Virginia and Denny Miller, professor of entomology at Virginia Tech, explain the law and science of bedbugs. That's law for the rest of us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.